The Golden Horizons Retirement Village was not, in fact, a village, but a two-building residential complex situated on a large knoll parallel to Paradise Highway. The twin red brick buildings were constructed during the real estate boom of the early 80s. Initially, they filled the housing needs of the burgeoning population of newly arrived workers who preferred to live closer to the coast and didn't mind the commute. Over time, as a result of the slowing economy, occupancy declined. Ownership of the buildings changed hands, and the new management sought to revitalize the space by reconceiving it as a multi-purpose retirement community, one that offered residents a choice of newly renovated apartments, assisted living accommodations, and a special care program for those in need of more intensive supervisory attention. A menu of luxury options was made available to all of the residents. Three meals a day were served in an upscale dining facility, and a variety of meal plans were marketed. Supervised recreational activities were promoted, offering personalized training and exercise regimens. Medical personnel were regularly on site, and trained orderlies supervised the village 24/7. Movies were screened nightly, and live entertainment was occasionally presented. Donnie Jacobs had originally been housed in an assisted living apartment, but due to his deteriorating state of mind, Emma had recently moved him to the special care unit. Jesse parked in front of the main building. He helped Donnie out of the cruiser, and they went inside. They walked through the lobby and past the sunroom, where a number of residents were gathered, either alone or in groups, involved in various games or activities. Visible through floor-to-ceiling glass windows, a group of residents outside was engaged in a yoga class. Donnie spotted one man in particular, sitting alone, staring blankly into space. "If that's who I turn into," he said to Jesse, "I want you to promise to put me immediately out of my misery." "Have you a preferred method for such a course of action?" "I'm serious, Jesse. Don't let me turn into a vegetable." The office of the director, Dr. Benedict Morrow, was located a few steps from the sunroom. Jesse and Donnie entered the outer office and were greeted by Dr. Morrow's assistant, Barry Weiss. "Donald," Weiss said, when he saw the two men enter. Barry Weiss was an affable man of considerable girth, reflective of someone who had never successfully disciplined himself when it came to food. "You found him," he said to Jesse. "That's a load off." Weiss picked up the phone, punched in a number, and spoke a few hushed words into it. Then he put the phone down. He stood and extended his hand to Jesse. "Barry Weiss," he said. "Jesse Stone." "Where was he?"
"At his house."
"His house?"
"Where he used to live."
"Well, he lives here now. Perhaps I could escort him to his room and arrange for him to be cleaned up."
"Would you like that, Donnie?" Jesse said.
"Would I like what?"
"Mr. Weiss has offered to take you back to your room."
"Come with me, Donald," Weiss said.
He reached out and took Donnie's arm. Donnie looked at Jesse for a moment, then lowered his eyes and went out with Barry Weiss. As he was leaving, Weiss said,
"Dr. Morrow will be along shortly. Hopefully we'll see you before you leave."
Jesse watched them go. He was filled with an ineffable sadness. He breathed the conflicting odors of antiseptic and decay. Dr. Benedict Morrow emerged from his office. He was wearing a full-length white lab coat with his name stitched on the chest.
"Chief Stone," he said, "Benedict Morrow."
"Dr. Morrow," Jesse said.
"Call me Binky. Everyone does."
"Binky?"
"I confess to the fact that I'm British. Displaced, perhaps, but still English to the core."
Morrow was middle-aged, soft-looking, and self-conscious. It was as though the part of the director was a role he was playing, and the performance was a taxing one.
"How does he seem to you?" Morrow said.
"Disoriented, confused. He didn't want to come back."
"A shame, really. Donald's on a downward spiral. His cognitive abilities are failing. His connection to reality has become fragile. His wanting not to return is completely understandable."
"Is he treated well here?"
"Everyone's treated well here. We regard our residents as family. We care for them with affection and consideration for their well-being."
"How is it that Donnie was able to simply walk away so easily?"
"It's not an uncommon occurrence, I'm afraid. We don't want the patients to get the idea that they're prisoners here. Although we have a security force,
is not 100% effective in securing those who don't want to be secured. The new owners have identified this as a problem and are working with us in trying to find a solution."
Jesse nodded and stared at Dr. Morrow, which succeeded in making him uncomfortable. He started to fidget.
"Well, if there's nothing else," Morrow said, "I'll be getting back to my work."
"I'd like to say goodbye to Donnie before I leave."
"Of course."
Dr. Morrow picked up the phone and punched in a number.
"Would you step into my office?" he said, when his call was answered.
Then he hung up.
"One of our attendants will be with you presently," he said to Jesse. "He'll escort you to Donald's room."
Morrow smiled. Jesse smiled. The two men shared an awkward silence as they waited for the attendant to arrive. A muscle-bound young man entered, dressed all in white, T-shirt, jeans, and sneakers. His ID badge read Charles Dempsey.